Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Around the NFL podcast is Biting Kneecaps 24/7.
From the Chris Wessling Podcast Studio, it's Around the NFL, the flagship program, Sunday night. We here now, Dan Hansis, heroes, Greg Rosenthal, Mark Sessler, and boys, you know, Omicron, that's going next level. Feels like we are this close to another global shutdown. I get very nervous about that on a number of levels. This whole place, this building feels like a ghost town. And this, the NFL is not alone. It's happening everywhere as people are kind of going underground as this virus is mutated into something very dangerous. But the big story right now, I think, is the long simmering analytics culture war that is really now coming to a boil within the football cognoscenti. And this week has been a big one because it started with Thursday and Brandon Staley saying, I hate field goals. I only want to score touchdowns, and all the drama around that on Thursday. Then it comes around to Sunday, the late game with John Harbaugh for the second time in 3 weeks going for two down one. And once again, failing. We're going to get to that game. But it feels like you're either on this side or the other side. I even could draw some parallels, Mark, to the political climate of this country a few years back, where it's getting more and more angry.
A few years.
And I think what makes this even more fun, that we have Greg on one side of this battle, me and you maybe on the other. Maybe you on the fence a little bit more, Greg, Mark. And that's going to cause some spicy tension in the studio all throughout the episode.
I agree with you 100%. I think it's like I look at all the stuff that creates the decisions that are being made. And like it's the way that we played like Madden and Tecmo Bowl growing up, where you just never punted. You went for it. And like all of it lines up and makes sense. And the numbers, like there's reasons that analytics is blowing up. All of that agreed with. I think sometimes for me, it's just like you can't even look at what happened at the end of the Green Bay-Baltimore game, which we'll get into, and even make a comment about it. You just have to say, yes, that's all you do.
I mean, if you have a comment, make it. Don't be afraid.
I'm not afraid, Greg. It's because when the climate is as it is, it's like there's a group of smart people and a group of like lumbering oafs. Lumbering oafs, if you in any way.
Dunderheaded people that don't get it.
From yesteryear. But it's not that. It's just that I think it is a place where there could be debate, not about what is the more mathematically probable situation, but just other elements of it.
Feel the game.
Dan got us into this. It's like, hey, Omicron on fire this week. And you know what else is on fire? Analytics.
I'll get the tweets like, Sessler doesn't know what he's talking about. He's a dinosaur. It's like, I am telling you, I agree with all elements of analytics. But I'm just saying that you're not even allowed to have a discussion.
No, of course you are. Like, we should have it. And I would say, like, I think what you're reacting to and what I do too is like, the discourse is tiring. In theory.
Bingo.
Right, but then just try to ignore it, I guess. What I would say.
I am bathed in it, 24, trying to ignore
like
what?
Have your own.
There's
like,
football game on every night of the week now.
There's right. an annoying.
You don't have to watch. You don't have to. Like,
yes, I do.
You mute the Twitter. I'm saying like.
It's become annoyingly omnipresent as a discussion if you cover the sport now. And I do get the feeling. For instance, perfect example. So I thought they should have kicked that extra point, Baltimore, in this game. 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago, I thought they should have went for two. But for some reason, you're not really allowed to take it game by game or moment by moment. It has to be all this way.
I think
always
that's what's
go
common,
for
though. You keep saying like you're
and
not
if you
supposed
don't,
to. You can say whatever you want. If
you're
you can't
labeled,
back up whatever you want to say and like stand behind it, it's not a big deal. It's a football opinion. It's like any football opinion.
I just feel
we
like
have.
You get
like,
you get labeled.
This feels different to me than just a football opinion. It does.
You get labeled an SP to use Scientology parlance. You're a suppressive
Here's
person
thing,
that
though.
Needs to be reeducated.
But this decision this is where so I guess true. I would think you guys are off with this because in this decision, I would say
I know I'm off with this. I'm an SP. I need
no,
to be
what
re-educated.
I'm saying is all the analytics people are going against each other because
I like that.
Numbers wise, this decision was far from clear. The numbers would have said to kick it. It would not have said to go for it necessarily. Harbaugh was kind of doing what you're saying is he was feeling like the flow of the game and he was looking at other factors that don't go into the number. And he was just saying like, I like Tyler Huntley right now. You know, I like going for it, even though the numbers would say I should kick it and trust my defense here. I don't really trust
it. And not to get down that wormhole, but
yes.
You are right.
Why
because,
not?
Well, because we haven't even, we'll get into that game, but they lost 13.9% of win probability, according to Next Gen Stats, not Next Gen Mark, when they went for the 2 point. And I think the last time they did it, his reasoning, because their secondary was shattered and it's still a mess, we get
okay.
that, made sense.
We'll get into
let's
the game.
Get into it.
Yeah.
Do you see Mark and I as SPs?
No, I don't okay. even – I think this it's straw man. It's change is uncomfortable. You know what I'm looking
no,
forward
but see,
to?
No, you're
though?
Suggesting that change is uncomfortable to Mark and Dan, but Greg
right.
is
no.
beyond the
and
curve.
And the other fools.
No, I'm saying, like, think of the Bill Belichick decision. I go back to this a lot, going for it with the lead on fourth down against the Colts. That stopped football for weeks. Now, that was a unique game. It was a big game. Those sort of decisions now happen fairly routinely, and it doesn't really stop football. I think this last week and certainly this season has been kind of a watershed moment of guys going for two. And whether that – I don't think there's going to be a – not everyone's going to be Harbaugh and Staley. They're getting the heat because they stand out. There's not that many coaches like them. But more and more, this is what football is going to be like more and more. And so the reaction's not going to be quite as much. It's just going to be part of it. I think kids growing up watching now, they're just going to get used to like that going for two is part of the game.
And it's not just going for two.
It's the fourth down stuff.
It's the fourth down stuff, too. It's become the situation where I think, you know, this is a copycat league also. And I think beyond just what their analytics departments are telling them, now all the like, quote-unquote top coaches all are consistently going for it as well. So I think it's caused this chain reaction where everyone goes for it.
Except for, you know, Bill Belichick. I think Belichick's
well,
a great
this?
Example because he is the most conservative coach in the league this year, and he plays to what his team is. In the past,
we'll
he's been, like, as
too.
Aggressive as ever.
Trivia question.
Yes.
First two-point conversion in NFL history. 1994, how did it happen?
Kevin Mack running
no.
over the
Mr. Brat. Conservative, Bill Belichick, shooting Tom Tupa, their punter, right into pay dirt.
Ooh, like that.
Maybe you're not an SP.
I'm not an SP. I enjoy debate from, you know, whoever.
Let's get
Most
into
people, not everyone.
All the games. And remember, it's not all the games of the week, not even close to it. We got two on Monday. We got two more on Tuesday. But we had 10 to dive into today and another one to go through from Saturday night. We'll get to that in just a few minutes. But let's start, yes, with the game that we've already been arguing about. Hit it, Ricky.
Green Bay's lead is 31-30. Can the Packers get one stop here on a two-point conversion? Motion from a tight end to the wing of the left side. Huntley in the shotgun. Latavius Murray to his right. Snap to Huntley. Rolls right. Throws right side of the end zone. And it's incomplete. Incomplete. Right corner of the end zone in front of the pylon. And incomplete. The Packers are going to hang on and win this game.
Yes, Wayne Larrabee with the call. WTMJ. John Harbaugh did it again. For the second time in 3 weeks, the Ravens scored a touchdown in the final seconds, then opted to try for the two-point conversion for the win rather than the game-tying PAT. And for the second time in 3 weeks, Baltimore walked away with a stomach punch defeat. 31-30. Packers hold on just barely. And Mark, this is a game, Lamar Jackson out with a sprained ankle. It's the first game he's missed due to injury in his career. He's missed a couple games due to illness. And Tyler Huntley really played well and brought this team back from a 31-17 deficit. And just the fact he had two rushing touchdowns where he just stayed cool under pressure, saw a running lane, took it, scored once, scored again in the fourth quarter. And that, I guess, emboldened John Harbaugh to say, I know it's not Lamar here, but I trust this guy to win this game. It didn't work out, but really a nice performance by Huntley. And, oh, by the way, the Packers clinched the NFC North with that win.
Well, they've showed total faith in Tyler Huntley. And, there's a lot of pressure on that entire offense because you're playing the Packers. You don't have Marlon Humphrey. Marcus Peters is out of the mix. Jimmy Smith tested positive for COVID. Their secondary was totally shattered, which I think, again, like that last game where John Harbaugh made that decision at the end, contributed again to this. It's like, do you really want to tie the game and give Aaron Rodgers less than a minute of regulation and then potentially the first possession in overtime? So I get all that. I look at the Ravens overall, who've got like 18, 19, 20 guys missing every game. That were this another organization, another team, their record would be reversed. I know they're out of the playoff mix right now. I fully trust that they'll get back in it.
Fully?
Well, you know what? Every time I say that, it goes south.
They play the Ravens next week. I mean, they play the Bengals next week, which will basically decide for that week who's ahead in AFC North. If they lose that one, they're in real trouble.
Well, then they have the Rams and the Steelers. So fully, let's strike fully from the record. But they are as resilient a team around. And
I helped you out there. I know it's been a bit of a slump you've been in lately.
I cannot believe that I am even talking about anything at this point. It's just been a nightmare. But I wouldn't be shocked if that Steelers game still has meaning in Week 18.
Oh, I fully expect it to. This was an amazing performance by the Ravens to be down that many players. I mean, you just mentioned their entire starting secondary. Oh, right. Yeah, by the way, Chuck Clark, Deshaun Elliott, like their safeties who were so good. Like none of their starting group was around except for Tavon Young, their slot corner, who leaves this game with a concussion. So that's, I think, part of the equation in deciding to go for two. This was not a game with a lot of possessions. Each team only had 8 possessions in this game, and yet look at the score, 31-30. So I think what you said, Mark, was well said, was that there was a chance here, a 75% chance, if you wanted to go for the numbers, that the Packers were going to get 2 possessions before the Ravens got any. You know, they knew that they were going to get 40 seconds left to go kick the field goal. That's why I figured he would kick the extra point. I assumed that the Ravens would just take the tie because either way the Rodgers can go get the game winning field goal, and that should be enough time for Rodgers to do it. So you might as well just tie it and not risk missing the two. But he just, I think, thought, like, let's go win it now. We don't want to play any more football because we're the inferior team.
That's also a lot of trust in Mason Crosby, who's been like a hot and cold semi-nightmare.
I just thought it felt a little different because they did get the stop that preceded the second touchdown, and they were at home, and they were just, it seemed like the momentum was on their side. But you know what? It didn't work out. And you know what annoys me? We just had that long conversation, and Ricky just sent me this tweet from Scott Zolak. This is exactly what I'm talking about. LOL, 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 shove your analytics. 0-2 Baltimore, LOL, LOL. I mean, this is like the Capitol riots portion of our side of the battle here.
That's the SP.
Yeah, these are the people.
The problem when you look around and you're it's some sort of argument on Twitter and you're like, wait, why is this guy on my side?
Yeah, that's not good. We try to separate from that because, again, I don't think I thought it was a smart, well, ballsy decision in both cases, but really smart to do it the first time. This time it felt a little bit reckless and almost like, I don't know. It's like if you view yourself as a Super Bowl contender, as a big AFC team, a team that's a division leader in that moment, maybe put some faith in your entire team there to get it done rather than what felt to me a way to steal a win. That's just how it kind of came off to me, like maybe a minor crisis in confidence, like, oh, wow, we might actually be able to steal this thing and get out of here, rather than saying, okay, we've taken control of this game. Right. Let's go win it.
I guess that's where I came from. I guess I think that's why in 20 years it won't be as big of an argument, because to me, It still is trusting your team to win. You know, it's trust.
That Zolak thing's annoying
right.
me, by the way.
Absolutely.
But, like, I think if you just change your perspective a little, it's like it's trusting our team to go win by scoring the 2 points. It's just a different way to try to go win. The annoying thing, and I'm with you, Mark, on this, is that after these games, the entire 60 minutes gets boiled down to that one decision. And, number one, it's crazy that the Ravens – like are in this game at all, like that the Packers blow this lead. The Packers should have put up 31 points and they did. The surprising part is that they're giving up so much yardage to Mark Andrews over and over and over. Obviously they didn't have an answer for Huntley. Like they didn't adjust. Like that was surprising to me to give up 30 points to the Ravens.
It is a reminder that, you know, with the possible exception of the Patriots, even the teams that we pump up as big defenses, they seem susceptible week to week to having letdowns. And that's kind of how I saw this game. They had a chance to close it out, and they repeatedly failed down the stretch there. But
Rodgers needs his tackles back. It's not just Bakhtiari. It's Billy Turner's out too. And Bakhtiari was practicing a little more this week, so that'd be good. And they might get those two back. That's been a big problem for them. He was under a lot of pressure today.
Early in the fourth, they were averaging over 9 yards per play on first down, Green Bay. I mean, they were doing fine.
And we'll get to the Cardinals in a few minutes, but with this win, a Cardinals loss, of course, the Packers have a tiebreaker, individual head-to-head tiebreaker on the Cardinals. Things are shaping up very well for Green Bay.
I wish we could go back. I remember Tyler Huntley, preseason star. I talked him up one of these episodes way back in August. Sometimes the preseason matters.
Preseason's back, baby.
This guy, he was, I think, the number one ranked PFF guy in the preseason. He went undrafted. He's a second-year player. I remember seeing all these tweets, like, or I saw a couple. It's like, ooh, where will Tyler Huntley be starting next year? Like, he's not starting anywhere. He's going to be the backup for the Ravens for two more years. They know what they got. This is amazing to hit on a guy undrafted that's this good. This early, like, he has been pretty good in all of his starts and his relief appearances.
Are you hinting at some QB drama?
No,
Baltimore?
Not
ooh,
at
take
all.
That, Greg. Go did, down that road. See
I did.
That,
I did see some of those tweets too. It's like, oh, they're better with Tyler Huntley right now. I mean, but they have moved the ball better the last six quarters.
Yeah. They're a well-run organization, so it does not surprise me that they've now developed a really good backup quarterback. That's why they're always good. They just know what they're doing. But it doesn't mean they're going to make the playoffs this year, because right now they sit, Mark, in the eighth seed?
I believe the eighth. And by the way,
does not qualify you.
It does not. I'm sure in 2 years there'll be 11 teams from both conferences making the playoffs in 26 regular season games. But
all right,
for then.
So, yes, that's a big game atop the NFC standings with Green Bay getting another win. Let's now look to the top of the AFC standings, where the Patriots were looking to get back into that one spot on Saturday night. Let's go back in time.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. Everyone, please welcome Coach John Calipari.
We're getting beat by 18. My first game in Kentucky. They're saying Cal's a bust. He can't coach. This is crazy. John Wall runs down the floor and makes a buzzer beater.
Yep.
You remember that, John?
That's my first game win I ever made. Remember you said you never seen me do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins.
I called Boogie. I'm like, yo, bro, I'm about to commit to Duke. And I hung up on him. Bro, I'm talking about, do you want to tell me how many times he called me all type of names? Bro, you really sold me out. You doing this.
Bro, I was sick. I remember that like yesterday, man.
Love you, John Wall.
Thanks, Coach. Love you, too.
You made me everything I am today.
Nah, you made me. You made me.
I love it. Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It wasn't even supposed to
do
my
game,
bro.
Hey, guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Wentz under center. Hands off to Taylor. Taylor, big run! He's at the 45, 50, 40, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10. Touchdown! Jonathan Taylor, 67 yards to the house! JT Painter!
Great call by Matt Taylor, WFNI. Bill Belichick will take away your best weapon. Well, not when Jonathan Taylor's involved. The star running back danced through a loaded box and took it to the house. A 67-yard rush. The clincher in a 27-17 win over the Patriots in front of a raucous home crowd at Lucas Oil Stadium. That was a great home crowd. I don't know if it's Saturday night. Probably was. Holidays, people maybe on vacation even with all this crazy stuff going on. Getting a little loose, having fun. Great vibe for a game. Anyway, Greg. That's the end of the seven-game winning streak for the Patriots, who couldn't quite dig themselves out of a deep hole of their own making. As for the Colts, they belong in that AFC contender conversation.
Yeah, they're 8-6. They got a big Christmas Day game against the Cardinals, which is really interesting. Like they're a team that's tied for that last spot, and yet it feels like they're about as good as any team in the AFC. I think it's all very even at the top. And the reason they got out to that big lead was both lines really won. I mean, especially the Colts defensive line, which is not something that we've talked a lot about this season. I thought in the first 20 minutes of the game, and that's basically when it was won, they were darting into the backfield and stopping runs. They were harassing Mac Jones, and they discombobulated and forced a lot of penalties from the Patriots offense, whereas the Colts offensive line on the flip side was very cohesive, pushed Patriots up front around. It's just a couple long drives, but that's sort of how the Patriots try to win. And when your team is based on like not making the big mistake and just playing smart, well, when you have a bunch of penalties, you lose the turnover battle 2-1, and you get a punt blocked, then you lose. Like the margin for error for like a team like the Patriots is a little bit smaller. And it was surprising to see both lines get handled early before they kind of settled down in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, it harked back a little bit to some of the up-and-down play from New England before the win streak. And, you know, I think they both want to do the same things, these two teams. And, yes, you're right, like Bill Belichick wants to take away your best player, and he couldn't do it last night. I thought the Colts and Frank Reich were much more successful at that. Are they imperfect? Yes. Are they scared of anyone? No. It had massive game-of-the-year energy because I think the Colts went in with this with a great plan, which speaks to their coaching, and trusted their players to go out and dominate. And the defense, to me, what they were able to do to New England early on, especially against the run, was they just took New England's identity away a little bit.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. This is a 20-0 game after three quarters. I think New England did miss Damian Harris and the physicality he brings to their running attack. And I also, it's a weird game because I came out of it actually feeling, as weird as it sounds, a little better about the Patriots and maybe a tiny bit worse about the Colts, if that makes sense. Because, like, with the Patriots, sure, they failed to execute. They get a punt block.
That's the third time this year.
They give up a touchdown that way. I think it was Jamie Collins has a potential pick six go through his hands. You have Mac Jones who throws two picks, including one in the red zone. And yet, they get off the mat, and so many, and I've seen this up close with my team so many times, so many, when you have a rookie quarterback, when things kind of snowball against you for a couple of quarters or a couple really bad drives in a row, you just lose that guy for the game. And it's just like, you know, it's a growing game for a rookie QB like Mac Jones. So for him to get off the mat and really thrive and get them back in the game, I was like, okay. I mean, he's already wearing big boy pants. And then on the Colts side of the ball, you cannot watch that game and see what happened with Carson Wentz when he throws that interception at the beginning of the fourth quarter when it's 20-7, and then see how Frank Reich calls the rest of that game and not see it as a direct viewpoint that he doesn't trust his quarterback. He was not going to let Carson Wentz ruin this game for him, and that's something to keep an eye on because Wentz had a chance to really bury the Patriots, and after Reich saw that pick, he was like, no, man, I got to give it to Taylor no matter what.
Well, the best version of the Colts is to get out the way they did, let guys like Darius Leonard make plays, let the defense line basically shut down anything else, you know, an opponent wants to do, and then ride Jonathan Taylor. I mean, they've gotten up big in these games. They did that against the Ravens and the Titans.
They're kind of terrible when they have big leads, though. That is their MO. Like,
well, then this they turned the corner in this game from a Colts angle. I mean, they
but they got tight with their play calling. I thought when they had a chance to put it away, and you could kind of feel it, the tension building, and they went from 20-0 to 20-17, and giving it to Jonathan Taylor with a stacked box, and he just happened to make an amazing play. I think this game could have very easily swung all the way over to the Pats.
It got close. I mean, I guess they don't trust Wentz. I hear that, but I mean, Wentz has been sturdy in a lot of games.
He completed 5 passes. And in all the games against good teams, they've had big leads and they've blown them and lost in the other 3. This time they blow them, and Jonathan Taylor was incredible. You know, the thing that impressed me was before that big run, the first 2 runs of that drive are up the middle for a first down. You know, the Patriots know the run is coming, and even in the fourth quarter, I think with 9 minutes left, they got 2 first downs by not being aggressive. So that was impressive by the offensive line. But on that game winning play, Dont'a Hightower and Devin McCourty are in the hole unblocked. Mm-hmm. It's not even the offensive line. It's just Jonathan Taylor being awesome. And I'm with you. I thought, Dan, that was – you don't want to lose, but that was a good experience for Mac Jones and the offense, I think, to be put in that position and respond the way
and
that
I think
– and the defense, for that matter, because the defense, after the first quarter, held up terrific. They were put in some terrible spots until that one play, basically. They had shut them down.
Quick aside for the media side of things, I think Greg Olsen is coming for Tony Romo, coming hard. He's closing fast. I thought it was very interesting – the way he explained how Jonathan Taylor makes guys miss in the hole, that he actually sets guys up in ways that makes him think he's going one way. And it's just like he's playing the game at a higher level than most running backs. I thought that was really interesting, and that's, I'm sure, a skill he used to get away from those 2 defenders there.
He had 7.7. He averaged 7.7 yards per carry between the tackles,
Olsen,
and the Patriots knew it was coming.
Olsen might be number one right now. I don't know. I
mean, but Kevin Burkhardt, by the way, knows friend
he's
of
awesome
show.
Too.
Incredible,
nice.
Yeah.
They're great.
Nice.
And Darius Leonard, like those 2 interceptions that Mac Jones threw, those were incredible plays. The Leonard play mentally and physically, and then the Okereke play, those were incredible plays by athletic linebackers.
What about the throw across his body under
loves.
Duress to Hunter Henry?
I
mean,
it's,
you don't come out disliking either team, but I do dislike something that happened in this game. I don't know why I need to bring it up, but I lost my lock on this, and I'm tired of it. This week of football has been...
What's up, bro?
An ill treat.
I'm a half game up now in the battle with the Vikings up ahead. Now you got to root for the Bears on Monday night. How much worse can it get for you?
No, I'm not going to be. I'm just going to sit back and watch, let life unfold.
I thought you meant like Carson Wentz had 5 completions in the fourth quarter or the second half.
The whole
I didn't
game,
realize
whole
he was
game.
5 for 12.
Right.
Wait, why isn't Frank Reich a genius for like putting his quarterback and putting him on ice and giving it to his running back 30
Come
times?
Come on. And that's not the same thing, and you know it.
Right, and not for nothing. You know, we talk a lot about fourth downs this week. And you didn't hear a lot of, like, holy cow, Frank Reich blew the game because all those fourth downs he went for, including in his own end with the lead. Oh, wait, that's because they went 3 for 3, and they won this game partly because he was aggressive on fourth downs late in this game.
Well, you got to give Wentz the credit for those QB sneaks then, because I think the Patriots knew the second 2 were coming.
Well, that dude is a tough MF-er. He's a great QB sneaker.
We got to move, but, like, speaking of being being very confident and being aggressive. I can't believe Bill kicked that field goal.
Well, yeah, that was bad.
Should have went for that. See, this isn't like Team Zolak over here.
Not at all. I'm
That's,
with you 100%.
You go for it there.
Right.
That put him in a really bad spot.
Yeah, it was really strange. I think he thought the flow of the game, he trusted his defense too much. It's strange because in the past, Belichick's been one of the most aggressive guys going for it.
Right.
But he's clearly coached differently this year with this quarterback and defense.
And just it was 4th and goal at Indy's 7-yard line, and it was
– You need touchdowns.
It was 20-7, and he opts for the field goal. He makes it 20-10, but then Indy has a 5-minute drive that's fruitless. They punt it, but by the time New England gets it back, they're down by 10 with only 3:48 to go. So it didn't work. They needed a 3-and-out, basically.
We're separatists. We're not SPs, because I think we don't exist in this box where no matter what, I'm a robot that says you must do everything aggressively. Or do I live in 1978? Okay.
Perhaps we're moderates.
We're moderates.
But this is what I'm saying.
I like that move by Belichick.
I feel like I'm a moderate too then by that. I don't think there's that many people in either camp. There are the Zolaks, and there are a couple of...
He's at the Capitol.
Right. There's a couple of members of football Twitter. There's a couple of members of football Twitter who are, like, no context analytics guys. But I actually think most of the people who are kind of pro analytics are all about context and the situation depends.
Are you reaching over from the other side of the aisle?
I am. I want us to be a better
country.
We're
in the aisle. We're in the aisle.
How about a Roman handshake? Pop, 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 pop. We're in this together. All right, let's move back to Sunday. Oh, this is annoying for you, Mark. And a little bit for everyone. All right, let's take a break, and then we will continue on the Sunday slate.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game.
Everyone, please welcome Coach John Calipari.
We're getting beat by 18. My first game in Kentucky. They're saying Cal's a bust. He can't coach. This is crazy. John Wall runs down the floor and makes a buzzer beater.
Yep.
You remember that, John?
That's my first game win I ever made. Remember you said you never seen me do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins.
I called Boogie. I'm like, yo, bro, I'm about to commit to Duke. And I hung up on him. Bro, I'm talking about, do you want to tell me how many times he called me all type of names? Bro, you really sold me out. You doing this.
Bro, I was sick. I remember that like yesterday, man.
Love you, John Wall.
Thanks, Coach. Love you, too.
You made me everything I am today.
Nah, you made me. You made me.
I love it. Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It wasn't even supposed to be my name.
Hey, guys. You know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Fourth down and 7. He gets the snap. He's back. He throws a pass and it's pulled in, and that's going to be a tackle. Is it short of that lead stick?
No way. No, he didn't make that first down marker. Well,
let's answer the question, Bradley Rogers. Is there space between the nose of the ball and the lead stick? No! Ball over on downs!
Bill Hillgrove and Craig Wolfley with the call for WDVE. They call him Joe Money. Joe Hayden made a huge impact in his return to the lineup. No moment bigger than when he stuffed Nick Westbrook-Ikhinus, inches short of a first down. Really, it was a half yard. It was a very nice spot there for Tennessee to even make it close. But either way, he was short of a first down at the Pittsburgh 10 in the final second, sealing a 19-13 win. Keeps the Steelers alive, very much so, or perhaps undead, to put it a different way, in the AFC playoff picture. Pittsburgh, it's not pretty. It never is with them this season, but they do have a survivalist mentality, and their defense on a day where the offense managed 168 yards total. The defense really stepped up, forcing 4 turnovers, 3 on consecutive Tennessee possessions in the second half. And that's just 10 days after they got whipped by the Vikings. And, so basically it was the defense and Chris Boswell being, like, under the radar, one of the very best kickers in the league, kicking 4 field goals in December in Pittsburgh. And that allowed the Steelers their second win over division leader in 3 weeks. So, listen, let's hear from Big Ben, by the way, just like where he's at, where the Steelers are at, and then we'll open up the conversation.
You know, I think we still have a pulse in this thing, so we'll see where it goes from here.
Notice a little tell there. I think we still have a pulse. He's now winking. This is the zombie Steelers. And, Mark, they're not going to die. I know you wanted them dead, but it's not happening.
I didn't expect them to die this week necessarily. I thought one thing about the Titans. If you got last week's version of the Titans, and I know they played a floating, wandering opponent in the Jaguars, but from their angle with a cobbled-together offense...
All right, Ben.
I mean, I'm trying here. Like, they didn't turn the ball. They didn't give the ball away. They had 3 lost fumbles in an interception today, and this game was always going to be close. I was surprised that the Steelers were not favored in this, looking at the personnel on Tennessee's offense.
They were eventually. By game time, they were slight favorites for once.
Yeah, I'm not stunned to see the Steelers. This is sort of what they are, and I think they'll probably go like 8-8-1, like I've been hoping. But you've got to get two wins out of four. Here's the thing. I mean, it's going to be tough. You've got the Chiefs, the Browns, and the Ravens. So I totally see them as survivors that will go down. Again, I said that Ravens-Steelers game will be big.
Would you rule it out, them winning two of those three, though?
Not at all. Not at all. But because I think that the league is essentially 78% totally middle-of-the-road operations.
Well, what about the AFC North? If they win two of their final three and they go 9-7-1, that probably wins the AFC North.
And they've earned it.
They've earned your division games, yeah.
Yep. But, like, think about that because – and I got a chance to watch this game. I don't know if you guys got good eyes on it yet. But – this does not feel like a team that's ready to make a deep run in January or be taken seriously against the big team. And yet they do hang around and fight their way through these games. And then there's something that's, again, like with John Harbaugh and the Ravens, there is something to be said for the coaching, that they do feel like they are maximizing their potential right now, as middling as that may be.
It's great. I mean, I'm glad Mark didn't watch this game because I was here in the early session, and we'll get to the Cardinals, but it was a lot of stress. If he was watching this closer, he would have seen a 23-yard field goal drive by the Steelers. This is all their scoring drive. A 39-yard touchdown drive. Then their final three drives. In the fourth quarter, they recover three straight turnovers in Tennessee's end, and they get a total of two first downs in those three drives, kick field goals for all three. That is a crazy – our defense is taking over and winning this game for us while the Titans are collapsing type of comeback. It is a TJ Watt Defensive Player of the Year type of game. In the first half, he had a play in the red zone where he had a quarterback hit, forced fumble, I believe it was, shut down a drive there, got three quarterback hits in the game, a sack and a half. A lot of this was pressure, and it's these teams kind of being exactly who they've been all season. Tennessee has shut down the run. They kind of dominated up front. Like, they didn't give up many yards at all. But Tennessee, it just doesn't have any offense. And Julio Jones got hurt again with a hamstring injury again. Who
it's
knows?
It's not going to happen with like, Jones.
Right. That's
these are who these
their plans
two teams
have
been.
With him.
Gravedigger, of course, of the Titans Film Room podcast. And by the way, just announced, you know how like in on Saturday Night Live, on Twitter, they'll show the little note cards, like who's coming up in the future episodes.
Always.
Coming up on TNF, in a huge TNF game between the Titans and
the Niners.
The Niners. Gravedigger will be sitting in with us on mic to talk that game. Now, Gravedigger.
Wait, assuming his social calendar allows for such activity.
None of that.
Yeah, we're not. Oh. Yeah, we got to pull that. He respectfully... I made the request to stop talking about his private life because he's got something simmering. He's got something on the burner. And we have said, absolutely respect you as a friend and as a colleague. So we will not ask you about what's going on with that married woman. But what we will ask you about is how concerned you are at this stage. That was a tough second half. And if the story is overblown or is over-talked about as it is now, is like Ryan Tannehill's on an island and he's not good enough to make a difference – man, it really does check out when you watch these games.
It's crazy. They had a 10-play span on offense where they turned it over three times.
Oh! Like,
that's unbelievable. And they did this in the two games against Houston and New England, the two games before the Jacksonville game, where they just kept turning the ball over. And it
nine
was,
of them.
Yes, nine in two games. And it was like, is this a fluke? Kind of like this. Nobody can turn the ball over this much, but is it because all the offensive players, skill players are hurt? And now that it's happened three times in four games, it's like, yes, I'm starting to think A.J. Brown is maybe, like, not just more valuable, but, like, way more valuable to this offense than Derrick Henry even is. Because
they ran for 200 yards. They did that against the Patriots, too. They ran the ball well a week ago. They've run it fairly well, even without Henry, and yet, oh, my gosh.
Their pass coverage seems to be getting more problematic by the week.
But, I mean, 168 yards Pittsburgh had in this game.
The Steelers had 20.
I mean pass protection.
Tennessee.
Oh, yeah. I'm saying that Ryan Tannehill took serious abuse a week ago, and the sacks are piling up, and it's just like it's not.
It's why I don't take them seriously. I mean, they could win a playoff game because they're well-coached and things can happen, but you're not going to win three with that offensive
Aaron
line
Brewer
in that pass protection.
Aaron Brewer's the backup guard. He's kind of a swing guard, and he got worked in Roger Saffold's absence. They did a pretty good job keeping TJ Watt from making a lot of plays in the first half, but then in the second half, he was all over the place. So I don't know.
And if you're curious how Titans fans are doing, and they're very upset because I had them at 12 in the power rankings this week, and you know they're probably not going to move up. One such user tweeted at me after the game, "I hope you have the decency when you do your rankings to understand that this is not the Titans team. Henry will be back. AJ back next week." All caps now. "Please do not put Colts ahead of them.
Does it matter to them so much? I mean, it's good for you.
That would be unknowledgeable. Stop doing these rankings as with bias. Be a pro." Oh, sorry.
Your Colts better be ahead of them.
That's your Zolak. I'm sorry. That's not you.
If the Colts and Titans are playing in a neutral field this week, Colts -7, I would say.
All right. Gravedigger, hang in there, buddy. Let's keep moving.
Goff leans in. There's the snap. He's back. Goff looking, throwing. Deep right side. Wants Reynolds. Got him. End zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Oh, baby, what a dart. Goff to Reynolds, who got the inside position on Byron Murphy. And the Lions have found the end zone again.
Oh, the bongos for the Motor City Kitty Cats.
You have fun with your bongos.
Con.
You still like this Lions team, Mark, like a week ago.
Situationally.
And what a voice on Dan Miller. It is good to be hearing him with some regularity on the show. He's just good. WXYT with the call. Jared Goff is Cliff Kingsbury's kryptonite, the punching bag QB. Let's face it, that's what he's become in the last couple years. Lit up the Cardinals secondary for 3 touchdowns, including that 22-yard strike to Josh Reynolds. The Lions cruise to a 30-12 win over the Cardinals at Ford Field. Mark, your Cardinals had been unbeaten on the road. Your Cardinals had looked like the most balanced team in football. Your Cardinals are suddenly in some trouble here.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it raises some of the more esoteric questions that we had about teams like the Rams when they went through a rough patch. It's like, oh, the Cardinals in primetime games, the lights are too bright. In playoff clinching scenarios under Cliff Kingsbury, they're 0-4 at this point. This looked like one of those games where a good team gets on an airplane, travels somewhere, and you can tell within 8 or 9 minutes this ain't happening for them. And sometimes you jump the gun with that feeling, but this never got into questionable territory. And we can get into the Cardinals part, but huge credit to Dan Campbell and the Lions. I mean, this was a team that going in did not have DeAndre Swift. Jamal Williams was out with COVID. TJ Hockenson is out. They are playing with guys like Charles Harris on defense, who has been awesome as their first-round pick. Josh Reynolds, though, has stepped up as a receiver. Guys like Craig Reynolds.
Amon-Ra St. Brown is really coming to his own here.
I mean, if you look at the roster up and down, it's like, wait a minute, what? You get why their record
is. But this is why the story's about the Cardinals. Like, to the Lions, it's like, that's really, they've showed a lot of positive signs the last few weeks, and Dan Campbell is such an upgrade, it seems, over Matt Patricia. But to be as talent deficient as they are, to be as banged up as they are, and to blow out the Cardinals, like, I'm with you in that you can't overreact, because like the Rams and so many other teams, there are times in a season where you go into a funk. I think that's where Arizona qualifies right now. I will say I am concerned about this Cardinals season without DeAndre Hopkins, because he has now gone at least till the NFC title game, if they got that far. That was a report that came out today. So he's not coming back. Is this a situation where their offense is going to just struggle to score points because they did the last 2 weeks?
I want to see more, because I feel like all these teams get this so-called mulligan scenario. Maybe that's what this was, but I totally agree with you that DeAndre Hopkins, that his absence matters. They did not have Rodney Hudson. I think that was a factor today. Kyler Murray just missed throws. They seem completely out of sync. They opened with 3 straight punts. They basically at one point had a 4th down pass knocked down. It was in the red zone. It was the Lions' first red zone stop all season. There was a terrible Murray interception where he was out of sync with a miscommunication scenario with A.J. Green, which has happened a couple times this year. They did not seem to me like the well-oiled machine. It was really the defense, too, that got beaten up in this. I mean, Craig Reynolds, who is from the wilderness, undrafted back, and looks great 2 weeks in a row, ran through them. They dominated time of possession when it mattered early on, and they tired out Arizona by the end. So, yeah, I think it's fair to be like, whenever a team that we're talking about as the best team in football gets conked out this way, That's not good. It's not good. I mean, the Lions, though, are not the record. I think that they tied the Steelers. They beat the Vikings, and they're getting better each week. That's why I wanted to start with them, because it's like they can get lost in the what's the problem with Arizona. They made a problem for Arizona today, too.
No, that's a fair point. I feel like they're more of a 4 or 5-win team. You certainly would rather see the Giants on their schedule than them or many other teams with better records. That said, you're the Cardinals. You lose by 18, and the problems that they have are now becoming repeating problems. Number one, they have gotten pushed around in terms of their run defense, and now you have the Colts coming to town. So we'll get into that game later week, but that's been a problem. And then Hudson being out is huge, but their interior line in general has been a problem lately, and especially when you've got a shorter quarterback. That whole idea of Kyler Murray as the MVP, that is
gone.
Long gone.
Well, that's
send that down the river.
That's long gone. And Mark, during this game, I remember I said one of my favorite or surprising moments of the season was watching him melt down when the Bengals were losing a couple weeks ago, and was confused because he was mad about his take being wrong.
It's a hot take apocalypse for Sessler right now.
Which
it's
is strange,
been a terrible week.
Which is strange, because if, like, we would all be having apocalypses if I could even remember what my hot takes were. During this game, he said, he muttered under his breath,
uh-oh,
you know, that cutting sort of mutter where it could cut glass.
Oh, I've heard it.
I'm done rooting for any teams this year. That's what. And then there was multiple, I wrote it down multiple times. Oh, God. Oh, God happened 3 times. And it was all Cardinals related. So, Cardinals fans, you got a man that has your back here in Mark Sessler.
Well, look, it's like what I'm done with is pet teams.
You said pet teams. That's
Like I grew up in a no-pet household, and I'm back in a no-pet household. I'm not clinging to anyone or anything at this point. I'm just going to do the best I can from here to the end.
That's good. All right. We should say the Cardinals started 7-0, and now they've lost 4 of 7. And I know Patrick Claibon, one of our favorites and a honorary hero. If you're listening, Pat, listen to this quote very closely from tight end Zach Ertz. We can't let this thing spiral. Momentum is real in the NFL, good and bad.
It's coming from an NFL player.
Hey, from a champion.
It's 3rd and 12 from the Panthers' 20-yard line. Snap. Allen takes a look. Looks for Diggs. Now changes the direction. Fires straight down the middle. It is caught in the end zone. Touchdown, Buffalo. Gabriel Davis. Touchdown, Bills. A 20-yard strike from Josh Allen.
John Murphy, WGR with the call. The copy here, John Murphy, Eric Wood. Eric Wood, I assume, the color guy.
He is, but former center.
Yes. I thought for a second the man's name was John Murphy Eric Wood.
That'd be a good one.
A lot of names, but it kind of all rolls off the tongue nicely.
These people with multiple middle names.
J-M-E-W.
Like, settle down, please, with yourself.
Anyway, that was just J-M. I call him Murph. Josh Allen threw 3 touchdown passes, including that hookup with Gabe Davis in the 3rd quarter. And the Bills snapped a 2-game skid with a 31-14 win over the moribund Carolina Panthers. The win combined with a New England loss moves Buffalo back within a game of the AFC East lead with a massive Week 16 showdown on the horizon, and we'll get to that. But Greg, we trusted Buffalo to handle Carolina and its broken offense, but how did the Brian Daboll attack look here?
They looked like they were working on the running game. It was almost like, okay, we get an early lead. Let's see what we can do by giving Devin Singletary 22 carries. And it was okay. It was fine. Like, this was a game that he went 22 for 86 and a touchdown. So that's different than normal. But almost every other aspect of this game.
That's gorgeous for this offense.
Right. That's a fair point. And they moved the ball when they absolutely needed to. It was a little closer, I think, than the score indicated. The yards per play were pretty close throughout. It was a 10-point game, and the Panthers had the ball in the 4th quarter. Like, it wasn't too crazy, but almost everything that you would expect to happen in this game, like, happened. It was Cam Newton, you know, the poor man's Josh Allen now. When Josh Allen came into the league, I called him the poor man's Cam Newton.
Full circle. Time is a flat circle.
And they really are similar, I think. But Josh Allen is so much better, obviously, now at throwing and running, I would say, but especially at throwing, and he is approaching or passing as good as Cam Newton ever was in terms of just throwing the ball and making plays on his own, that Josh Allen did enough and you got out of here with a pretty comfortable.
A little bit deflating if you're a Panthers fan, I imagine, because when Cam came back and all the excitement around that, and it felt like he was going to kind of revitalize the whole operation, and then kind of reality sets in. That Cam that you fell in love with, that one MVP, he's gone. And the guy that's here parachuted into a very difficult situation, not his playbook, doesn't have the same skill set. And I guess every time I saw highlights on Twitter, it was something like, oh, man, the Panthers' offense is terrible. I saw so many of those things.
They ran today. I mean, like, Cam, like, he's been okay for fantasy. He has more rushing touchdowns this year than like, Alvin Kamara and Aaron Jones. Like, he has a rushing touchdown every week. He goes 15 for 71, but their passing game is terrible. They passed it 42 times for a net of 124 yards.
Oof.
I mean, it's funny because Rhule came in and he said, we're just going to run like crazy. They actually ran for 151. They were down two scores for much of this game, so it was tough to stay committed to the running game. But they were pretty good at running, and they hit Josh Allen a lot. That is my number one concern with the Buffalo Bills. It is not their defense, and it is not their running game. It is just their offensive line in general, because when you combine a lack of a running game with not being able to protect Allen, that's problematic, and he had to really earn his 210 and 3 today. He was hit a lot of times by this Panthers team.
They've got the Pats up next. Every time I watch the Panthers, I feel like Matt Rhule, his face on the sideline, is getting more and more agitated with the concept of life, this star has fallen so far at this point that the Cam is back stuff from a couple weeks ago feels like a strange dream from early autumn.
It's going to be interesting and a lot of fun to watch the Bills and Pats rematch. That I feel like that's...
I think for you, the best thing that could happen for you in the world would be the Bills to drop a bomb on New England, and it would confirm kind of everything that you have been trumpeting about the Patriots of late. I am not...
Did you hear my analysis of their performance on Saturday night? I came away impressed by them. I wasn't dancing
on
their
grave.
I think it's
a next level in this psych warfare that we have going on to use that space where they lost to praise them.
Well, if that
that's a Belichick move too. Praise them when you lose and hard on them when they win. That's
Belichick
interesting. Move.
I just wish that my favorite team isn't losers of 25 of 30 since week one last year. So if I could find something to root for and be happy, okay, I guess it's rooting against the Patriots. But I just want to see how the Bills react now 3 weeks after the events of that Monday.
Because how much do you take from this game? I think
I don't know. I got to see the offense, how it looked, but it doesn't seem like it was locked and loaded again. So
no, it was fine. It was what you expected. I didn't change my view in either way. It also was a very much a veteran team taking care of business, as that's what we asked for. This Bills game, though, next week, we said it, how the division's not over. Patriots lose. Bills win this week. Now they're only one back. If the Bills could win next time out, they get 4-2 in the division. Then it comes down to like the Patriots having to beat Miami and getting the other tiebreaker. And I'm not at this point, I think the Patriots would have the edge, but it gives the Bills a real chance to win the division.
Well, the Bills would have the Falcons and Jets to close the season. So
right.
That is a dangerous matchup.
There you go. Ricky, by the way, I just want to circle back. We had the lock of the Patriots that didn't work out for Mark, but you had locked against the Patriots. Do you get the lock sound or do you get the sad horn?
No, because I locked the Colts, technically.
Right, but didn't we, standings-wise, weren't we thinking that when you do the reverse lock, you should get credit for losing but be penalized for winning?
Yeah, I don't know where we
actually... So you took the L, I think, ultimately.
I definitely did. I definitely did, and the listeners were great letting me know on Twitter that I lost that I lost my streak.
What do you think? What's our official ruling? Is she getting credit for wins or losses?
It's very
convoluted
now, especially now. I think had the streak continued, we'd be on to something. I think we're just in the low part of mediocrity at this point.
I mean, I think it was like six in a row locking against the Patriots.
So either the winning streak ended or the losing streak. It's tough.
I don't think you can't get credit because some of those times – oh, wait, they were always locked against.
Right.
You're getting credit for a win when the Patriots were like, out of the number range, right, for instance. So that also would be confusing.
She was veering towards, you know, like, I mean, purity, yeah, in terms of defeat.
It's very mine.
And you had a lock-off win over Mark, but was it really? It was kind of a lock-off law. I mean,
right,
you're kind of operating on a different level than the rest of us right, yes, now. We're just trying to play catch-up.
Yeah, it's tough.
All right.
To be fair, she only switched to that strategy because she was in a hole.
I mean, Greg, you don't need exacerbate the situation.
We don't need it.
I'm just saying.
We don't need your.
Was it like week two?
Your man spreading, okay? We don't need this toxic masculinity. Ricky's just doing her best here.
I mean, I'm not. I'm right there near the bottom.
Hey, we got your back, Rick.
Thanks.
Don't worry. All right, we got to take a break, right?
Yep.
All right, then we'll be back.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. Everyone, please welcome Coach John Calipari.
We're getting beat by 18. My first game in Kentucky. They're saying Cal's a bust. He can't coach. This is crazy. John Wall runs down the floor and makes a buzzer beater.
Yep.
You remember that, John?
That's my first game win I ever made. Remember you said you never seen me do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins.
I called Boogie. I'm like, yo, bro, I'm about to commit to Duke. And I hung up on him. Bro, I'm talking about, do you want to tell me how many times he called me all type of names? Bro, you really sold me out. You doing this.
Bro, I was sick. I remember that like yesterday, man.
Love you, John Wall.
Thanks, Coach. Love you, too.
You made me everything I am today.
Nah, you made me. You made me.
I love it. Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It wasn't even supposed to be my name. That's my game, bro.
Hey, guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait!
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
The Bengals don't huddle. They snap it to Burrow. Throws downfield for a wide open. Boom. Boyd. Catches it to 30. Great, yeah, jump cut. Back toward the middle of the field, yeah, to the 10. The nice. 5. Touchdown! Nice. Bengals! A 56-yard answer. Joe Burrow to Tyler Boyd. That's, and like, the Bengals are back in front.
That's me doing color commentary. Nice! Nice! Looks good.
That reminds me of a guy I used to work with. His response to anything was just, nice. It's good to be, you get paid for it. That was Dan Horde and Dave Lapham, WKCY. Thank God this game had that play, because there wasn't much else to get juiced up about. Joe Burrow and the Bengals offense was silent on Sunday in Denver. That is until Burrow connected with Taj Boyd. Nice! On the 56-yard touchdown that allowed Cincy to escape. Ricky, can we isolate that nice for future Bengals talk? Escape town with a 15-10 win over the Broncos. Greg, it's hard to feel like we could trust the Bengals even after this win, but, I mean, this is a first-place team.
Sure, and that's good. Go get a win. It doesn't really impact how they're going to play next week. But I don't want to hear that this is some sort of great Zach Taylor moment.
Nice.
I mean, they had 12 first downs and 249 yards in this game. You got the job done. The defense made it stops against Drew Lock when they needed to. Teddy Bridgewater left this game.
Scary.
Yeah, with a really scary hit. Body wasn't moving, but they did say he had a feeling in his extremities, and it was a concussion, or they were checking for a concussion, and he was in the hospital being checked at. So the Bengals got it done, but my focus here is, you know, as it often is, on game management. Vic Fangio's terrible at it. Broncos fans know. You know, sometimes, like, we can get lost in the game management, and that's not the most important thing. And in this game where so little happened, give Joe Burrow credit. Makes a nice 3rd-and-10 play on their last offensive drive under pressure, getting hit to Tyler Boyd. Great job. You know, kept the jet drive going. He made a couple clutch plays. Okay. Fangio blew 6 points. A 6-point swing at the end of the first half, and then totally mismanaged the clock. Not that Drew Lock was probably going to do it at the end, but they
probably
could have had 2 minutes for Drew Lock at the end of the game, and instead he just wasted 40 seconds. And the sequence at the end of the first half where he ended up allowing the Bengals to get 3 points instead of being aggressive and getting the 3 points. I could really break it down play by play if you guys want, but I don't think you want to hear it. It's like it's just annoying.
I like knowing that you could if you wanted to. That shows me that you're locked in on this game. And
like they were setting up for a long field goal at the end of the first half. They were not trying to move the ball down the field. A guy goes out of bounds with 17 seconds. For some reason, Fangio takes a timeout even though the guy was out of bounds. And instead of doing whatever they could, which they easily could have, it was a 3rd-and-1 to make sure if you were going to be conservative to bleed the clock out, that they throw a pass, they don't get it, they end up kicking a long field goal. Then they play this terrible, like, way too safe defensive coverage, which just let Joe Burrow get 20 yards to kick their own field goal. That was a 6-point swing, and the whole drive leading up to that was mismanaged, and me and Broncos Twitter were first guessing as it was happening. So that's like a little 6-point swing in such a close game. And then at the end, he took this timeout before the 2-minute warning, where if you are a guy who plays Madden or whatever, you just knew that Fangio
or a girl
like wasted 40
woman.
Seconds. Like he could have had 40 seconds more. And the Broncos, if you're going to be a defensive team, I've been ranting too long, but if you're going to be a defensive team that was is trying to play in these types of games, and I think Fangio finally has the defense he wants playing, then you got to be able to win on the margins like that. And he's terrible at that.
Here's my question, because we're nearing the end of year 3 with Vic Fangio, and I think we get what he brings defensively, and he's unique and on that front. I mean, Brandon Staley loves him for multiple reasons. Why isn't there someone else? Like, well, I'm wondering, just is there someone in the ear of Fangio or in general saying, this is not your skill set, we'll take over these decisions? Why is Fangio making these decisions when he's been proven to be an utterly subpar time game manager?
The game's moving fast. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's like
either he hasn't put someone in position to help.
It feels
him.
Like in 2021,
it's Shermer too. So how they approached that drive, it's Teddy a little bit too in terms of the how lackadaisical it was. But it almost felt like that's how they were coaching it. But it was more the use of the play calling when there were 17 seconds too to throw a pass there, not like foreseeing exactly what happened. And it honestly felt like whoever's winning 6-3 at halftime is going to win this game because there's so little offense.
Every once in a while on the show. You have a summertime take that you get locked into, and you end up saying it repeatedly, and then it becomes a thing, and then the fans get on you repeatedly. And me being against Drew Lock was something that brought much derision from Denver. What do they call themselves? Broncos Nation? I don't know. Do they have a thing?
I'm sure some use that term.
The Broncos wagon. They killed me on Twitter for weeks, and then we fast forward to the present, and Drew Lock is not the guy.
Was that this offseason or
last offseason?
Yeah. Wes pushed back for you a little bit. He wanted to give Drew Lock a chance a little bit.
That last drive, I'll just go through it. 1st and 10 at the Denver 25, down 5 points, 64 seconds on the clock. Incomplete pass, holding. So now it is 1st and 20 from the Denver 15.
But that incomplete pass, I know there was a penalty, but it could have been intercepted. We should throw that in.
Then Drew Lock pass incomplete short middle to Jerry Jeudy.
Also could have been intercepted.
Now that's the Mike Helton one, right?
Now it's 2nd and 20 from the Denver 15. Drew Lock sacked for -9 yards. Now it's 3rd and 29 at the Denver 6. Drew Lock short pass right to Jerry Jeudy, pushed out of bounds, 9-yard gain. Penalty on Cincinnati, offside. So it's 3rd and 24. Drew Lock throws into coverage. Jerry Jeudy incomplete. 4th and 24. Drew Lock throws it 27 yards out of bounds. Game over. I just want one of the Drew Lock people that are Broncos fans to come to my Twitter feed and say, you know what? Respectfully, I apologize for all the mean things I said. You were right about Drew Lock. Just one of you can speak for the entire Broncos way.
That would be
a
next level step by them. I mean, I think we lost some Drew Lock people when he appeared earlier in the season was a total disaster. He's, too.
Yeah, it's like all the... You know, Teddy had one of his worst games of the season before going out to injury, unfortunately. But we've seen what happens when Teddy leaves. They would not be 7-7. They would be 4-10. But in the end, I don't know if there's much of a difference other than they're going to have a worse draft pick because they needed this game.
We got to keep moving. So I don't want to get into the Teddy culture wars.
No, we don't need to.
But if they had someone better than Teddy, they'd probably be 10-4, and we wouldn't be talking about Vic Fangio.
No, I'm not. Well, yeah, but how do you find someone better? It's like Aaron Rodgers is someone better.
We know. All right.
You know, it's like who are they going to get?
Again,
who are they? We don't need to.
Let's move on.
Empty backfield. Tua. Slam pattern. Parker. Touchdown.
One-on-one, Devontae Parker on a post pattern, gets inside for the touchdown.
That was Jimmy Cephalo, WQAM. Devontae Parker caught an 11-yard touchdown pass from Tua Tagovailoa with 3:37 to play. The Dolphins extend their winning streak to 6 games by topping the Jets 31-24 at Hard Rock. Duke Johnson, that's your boy, Mark. He ran for 107 yards and
not really
2 touchdowns. And the defense held the Jets to 3 first downs in the second half. That's good.
Kind of my boy.
As Miami continued to feast on its ridiculously soft schedule. Weird game. Tua was miserable at the onset. It was like him and Zach Wilson had been in some type of a body switch comedy. He threw an interception. He threw another couple balls up for grabs. He had a fumble, and the Jets weren't able to really take it to him, but they were up 10-0, the Jets, in this game. And they had a lead for the first time at halftime, but Tua got things back on track. The Dolphins took control of the game, both in the trenches and with Tua making some nice passes downfield. They get the game under control. They go from down 17-7 to up 24-17, and then Tua makes another terrible mistake, throws a pick six that ties the game up, and yet you never felt in the fourth quarter, even 24-24, that the Dolphins were in any real danger, because the Jets' offense, after a promising start, completely went to bed. Miami's defense took complete control of the game, and to Tua's credit, in an up-and-down day, he did lead them down the field for that go-ahead score. Cut to 4th and 10 for the Jets on the last possession of the game. And Zach Wilson throws a 9-yard pass short of the sticks, and that's how it ends. So Dolphins become the second team in NFL history to get to 7-7 after starting at 1-7.
Wow.
And we will see if this ends with a playoff berth, but I guess I still want to see it against some real competition, but they deserve a ton of credit, because that's not an easy thing to do.
What happened with the Jets? This happened twice now in the last 3 weeks, where Zach Wilson, everyone is loving what he did in the first half. Like, they come out pretty fast, but then I saw 54 yards, only 3 first downs in the second half. It seems like a trend with him that he has put together, like, half games. Like, you look at the numbers, they're not terrible in this game, but then it didn't stay.
The first couple of drives, he was on target. He was going through his progressions. And then I have to say the offensive line got completely destroyed in the last, I'd say, 2.5 quarters of the game, and put him in a bad spot. He was running for his life a lot. So I don't know how much to put on Wilson, but I will say that it might be a coaching situation. I thought Mike LaFleur had a really really interesting, fun first half, where it was like a kitchen sink thing, where he had all these trick plays he was emptying out, and some of them were working. And then a switch got flipped for the Dolphins and Brian Flores with that defense, and they just absolutely dominated from that point. So, yeah, I can't really make sense of it other than to say that I think LaFleur had a good game plan early but wasn't able to adjust once Miami did.
Miami's in the wrong conference, because you win 6 straight games in the NFC. It's like punch my playoff ticket. But despite winning all these games, they're still only 11th. In the conference, and yes, they're only 1 game back, and they can certainly make it if they win out, but that's probably what it'll take, and they're at New Orleans, not a gimme, at Tennessee and New England. So you've been waiting, Dan, to kind of see them against better teams. I think, like, their pass rush is something that will travel. It's legit. It took a little while to get going, but the coaching and the players combined, like, week after week, they are just mauling people up front. But I'm curious, as you are, to see how Tua and the offense, who didn't have Jalen Waddle today, will look against some better defenses, and they're about to play pretty good defense.
I mean, they gave up 55 points over 5 games before coming into this, and I know what the schedule is, what it is, but their defense was legitimate last year under Brian Flores. It is again. I'm with you, Dan, though, that there aren't a lot of things to point to and say the ceiling is here the way we look at the Colts.
This schedule set, even, you know, they're out of this insanely soft portion now. But you say they're in the wrong conference. Well, they got the Jets twice and the Texans once in the 6-game stretch. And then out-of-conference games included the Giants and Panthers, two of the
very worst teams. Yeah, I just mean, like, 7-7 in the NFC, you're in right now. And in the AFC, you're buried.
But do I think, like,
12th.
The Saints or Titans the next 2 weeks are bad matchups for them? I don't. So I think they have a chance to really sneak into the playoffs. They don't like their chances once they got to postseason play, but, man, that it's been
Why was Duke Johnson, nice by the way, on the street? 23 for 147. This guy can always play good on third downs. I'm not saying he's like the best player ever, but like receptions from running backs since he's entered the league, he's in like the top three players in the NFL. So there must be something else going on.
He's always had those numbers that like that project him to be more than he is, frankly. That's all.
Well, just to be a guy. He does live in this. I saw live in the same, I believe, like a apartment complex type of thing. As Tua Tagovailoa, which gets to one of my favorite Adam Leviton theories, which is like the neighbor theory. He does little thing. He has like the shower narrative. Like if guys showered together in college, they always have nice big fantasy numbers together. But also the neighbor
nice big fantasies.
Yeah, the neighbor narrative. If like because Tua was saying how they see each other, you know, kind of like going out to get water, pick up the
like
mail.
That.
I'd like
that
to hear more
out
from Adam Leviton on his various theories.
That.
That's intriguing to me.
All right, let's check in with the other moribund in New York franchise.
Second and goal at the one. McEwen motion.
It's New Jersey. Right. Don't
Another
you forget it.
Motion. Play fake. Prescott looks right, looks left, throws it in the end zone. Caught. Touchdown to Dalton Schultz.
Brad Sham, the Sham God. KRLD with the call. Dak Prescott threw just one touchdown pass, that going to Dalton Schultz. But that was enough for the Cowboys, who rode their defense to a 21-6 win over the Steelers, who exist mostly in theory at this point. The Cowboys' defense forced four turnovers for the third straight game. But, Greg, how'd you feel about this perplexing offense?
Same. This was the ultimate just repeat of their last 4 weeks.
Uh-oh.
It's like, remember, it felt like the Chiefs were in the same game every week for about a month. That's the Cowboys. Hmm. DeMarcus Lawrence and Dak Prescott made a bet of some sort. Hmm. Maybe it was just sort of an honor, you know, because they're not officially allowed, that the defense would force more turnovers than the Cowboys' offense scored touchdowns. Hmm. And DeMarcus Lawrence won.
Big W.
Largely because of DeMarcus Lawrence, who was an absolute beast. Maybe that's the slightly newish narrative out of this. He's been good the last few weeks since returning, but he absolutely took over this game for a big chunk of it. And just if he's peaking and Parsons is peaking, that's crazy.
Trayvon Diggs had his 10th interception. Gregory had a big return last week. They have so many pieces on defense that I struggle. I don't know if it's just because we were so used to looking at the Cowboys as this, like, offense-first juggernaut. Like, I'm struggling cognitively to kind of make this process that they're now going to make a playoff run on the backs of their defense. Is that just where we're going now?
Well, I think that – wanting any of these teams just to ride their defense to the Super Bowl, I mean, that feels tricky because when their offense was special, it felt totally unstoppable. And it is what it is at this point.
Well, they really are just like the Chiefs, I think, earlier in the year. And I think they're just glad to be banking wins while they're struggling offensively. And they almost have to know that their offense has to be a lot better for them to go where they want. They are 10-4. And that's pretty amazing if you think back to the beginning of the season. We did not expect them to be 10-4, much less with Dak Prescott struggling this week. 41 dropbacks against this Giants defense, which is like no great shakes. 202 net yards.
You bring it back no great
no
shakes?
No great shakes is back, baby.
Bring it back.
They didn't have a play over 20. They didn't have a play over 20 yards. The Giants with Mike Glennon, who had 99 yards passing and three interceptions, and then Jake Fromm, who came into the game late, actually had more yards per play than the Dallas Cowboys in this game. And that's just weird. Yeah. And the Cowboys ran the ball well. So that narrative, forget about that. It was all about their passing.
Zeke said he was feeling healthier going into this game. Did he look a little better?
He went 16 for 52. He looked fine. Lamb dropped two or three passes, which would have helped, but Cooper had five targets for 8 yards. Like, it's just not there right now.
So now, we have they are the mirror version, I guess, of Kansas City, or at least before the last couple of weeks. And that's slightly underwhelming as a football fan. I like the Cowboys when they were the shoot-it-out offense. But this works too, I guess.
They're going to win the division. They're not going to, you know, Philadelphia is not going to catch up with them. So if you look at the Cowboys' schedule, you know, it's all in the division, and they're not out of it for the one seed, as crazy as it is, because they're going to be favorites in their next three games. And if they could get a little help from Green Bay and Tampa, who knows?
They are rock solid lock to get taken out in January.
Oh,
wow.
Definitely.
Wait, I thought you were giving up on takes.
Absolutely,
for sure.
They will lose in the playoffs.
Okay, well, that's...
It's not that bold.
Yeah, I guess.
I'm not even suggesting it's bold.
That's true of every team except for one. I was wrong. It's not all in the division. They do play the Cardinals in Week 17. Wow, this Cardinals schedule down the stretch really sets up for them to kind of be in the crosshairs.
Uh-oh. All right, let us now move to the 49ers. We're looking to keep their momentum going.
40 seconds to go. Moving in motion, Jeff Wilson Jr. It's a handoff to Debo out of the Deadpool. Gets wide left. Touchdown! San Francisco!
I love it. Greg Papa. Yeah, Papa. Can BR with the call. Jimmy Garoppolo threw for 235 yards and a TD. It's a very Jimmy Garoppolo line. And San Francisco ran for three more scores, including yet another Debo Samuel scamper that you heard there. Niners won for the fifth time in six games, beating the Falcons 31-13. Mark, nice take care of business win over a fraudulent Falcons operation.
Yeah, you said it felt like what we've seen from Debo, and it felt like what we've seen from the Niners during this hot streak that they're on. A little bit of a slow start, then they scored on five straight drives, including four straight touchdown drives. And the difference here early on was their defense. Nick Bosa was awesome in this game. Left for a little bit with a presumed concussion, but came back in. They shut down the Falcons three times inside of San Francisco's 10-yard line. They also recovered a fumble at one point. To me, this was what you look at with the Niners and say, you can project them as a playoff team and feel comfortable with what they are. George Kittle had a George Kittle game. Debo Samuel did what he did. And Jimmy G, when you get a game like this where he's not turning the ball over and turning Kyle Shanahan's face beat red, you're fine. I mean, the Falcons, we know that they came into this with the last in team DVOA, a little bit suspect, not their record. They looked like it today. They couldn't protect Matt Ryan. They couldn't get anything done.
They've been pretty steady. I know they got lucky last week against the Bengals somewhat, but they are 5-1 in their last six, you know, with some pretty good wins in there. Rams, Bengals, you stomp out the Falcons, which is what you're supposed to do, but I hate that term, like the team you don't want to play in the playoffs. But they certainly feel like a team that
they deserve
could win
a seat at the table.
Right.
Absolutely.
Then they, right. But they also feel like a team that could compete or beat any team in the NFC. I would want to get away from them and get to whoever's taking that seven seed.
This is what I want in a wild card team. You know, they're frisky. They can get hot. They have some exciting players. Make that first weekend as fun as possible. Mark, because I have a bye in my fantasy playoffs, I didn't have to struggle through a Falcons game looking at Kyle Pitts as an inevitable march to 4-for-38. Where did he finish this week?
4-for-77.
Ooh, 77?
Yeah.
You got a big play, like a 50-yarder or so.
Okay. No touchdown, though.
No touchdown. I was monitoring this.
Debo is back at a wide receiver, 4-for-60 as a wide.
That's good. Mark called for that, and rightfully so on Friday on the broadcast on Saturday. But, which, by the way, the Around the NFL broadcast, there's some pop going on right now. There's some heat both behind the scenes and in the Twitterverse. People are into the show. They love the rebranding of it. They think that it's really it's captured the spirit of the podcast, hasn't it, Greg?
I think it's captured the spirit of America. At this time when – Omicron is just going across the country.
Omicron,
like, people are wondering, where can they turn to? Well, they know on Saturday mornings at 4 a.m. Pacific. Check us out.
We're there for you.
We will be there for you. Probably.
At that time.
We are here for you guys. They might take us out of the studio.
No, they've been good shows. They've been
but
fun.
We will be.
They're different than the podcast, but
you. They're
like the podcast.
Yes.
Somehow at the same time.
Check it out, yes, every Saturday, and you could also check it out on Game Pass. And Ricky, right, people have access to it on YouTube as well?
That's right. It streams live on YouTube and then stays up on the main NFL YouTube.
And how do they find it? Just type in what?
Yeah, if you go to the main NFL YouTube page, it'll pop up as like being streaming live. I think it's 10 a.m., Pacific,
yep.
Which is 1 p.m.
Eastern,
and then 8.
Something like that.
6, 5.
All our blokes and blokettes out in the
and
UK
then it's up,
and beyond.
Then they put it up pretty soon after that.
Yeah,
so you
have a pint and enjoy the show on a Friday. That sounds nice.
For sure.
All right, let us take a break, and then we will wrap this thing up. Blokettes.
It doesn't work.
What is it? It's blokes and...
Well, I don't know what they would – you're saying what is a female version of bloke?
Yeah, in the UK and surrounding territories.
Well, I'm not going to
say
that I know.
You have that you know, territory. Unlock.
Like 4 years old when I lived there. I wasn't calling people blowcats, it made such a huge impression.
While we dig into this awesome Houston Jacks game, if you or Gravedigger could find the female expression for bloke over there, that would be great.
Maybe a bird.
Is it like a?
I'm not saying that's like a Brenda or something.
No, that's Australian.
Sheila, you're thinking of Australia.
I think bird would be it.
It is Sheila, actually.
But that's also British. I thought that would be Australian.
Down the yellow brick
road. Or a lass.
A lass.
North England.
I don't know what Irish. Maybe these are out of touch. Who knows?
All right, let's hit the game that everybody's been waiting for.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. Everyone, please welcome Coach John Calipari.
We're getting beat by 18, my first game in Kentucky. They're saying Cal's a bust. He can't coach. This is crazy. John Wall runs down the floor and makes a buzzer beater.
Yep.
You remember that, John?
That's my first game win I ever made. Remember you said you never seen me do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins.
I called Boogie. I'm like, yo, bro, I'm about to commit to Duke. And I hung up on him. Bro, I'm talking about, do you want to tell me how many times he called me all type of names? Bro, you really sold me out. You doing this.
Bro, I was sick. I remember that like yesterday, man.
Love you, John Wall.
Thanks, Coach. Love you, too.
You made me everything I am today.
Nah, you made me. You made me.
I love it. Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It wasn't even supposed to be my day.
Hey, guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait!
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Third down and nine.
We're going to get a million tweets about that. So some regrets, but we're going to.
Don't tag me.
Has the first down and more. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Rock and roll. Touchdown, Houston. Brandon Cooks to the house.
Something about that rock and roll one. It's like a play-by-play guy from 1987. I like it. It's kind of throwback. Mark Vandermeer with the call, KILT. If only the Texans could play the Jaguars every week. David Culley's team completed the season sweep of its division rival with a 30-16 win at the Big Chlorine Tank in Duval. It was the Jags' first game without the deposed Urban Meyer, proving definitively he was not the problem in Jacksonville and should see every penny of the five-year deal he signed with the team. That's business.
Interesting.
That is business. Mark, everything I said is correct, yes?
Yeah, I mean, I'd go so far as to huddle if your team ownership, team brass, to say he's not the problem. Maybe we bring him back,
right,
via culpa, and start this over.
Fired with cause? How about cause for apology, the results that we saw today in Jacksonville?
Yeah, I mean, it might have helped today. You know, this is the rare game.
Quick on this one, Mark.
Huh?
Quick on this one.
Oh, I'll be quick if you'd like. How quick do you want me to be?
I don't know. How about a little, like, 30-second synopsis?
How about a little love for Brandon Cooks, who's, you know, been – it's sort of been a hostage scenario for him in Houston, but a 100-yard game today. He's been very good. He's been their dude week after week. Davis Mills, who started last week 14 for 14, opened 13 for 15 today. Mm, so I'm telling
you,
like, I don't know. Obviously, they're going to have bigger plans, and they could have a whole new coaching staff after this season. Their GM gave – like a vote of no confidence a couple weeks ago. So TBD. But Davis Mills gives you a lot to think about in terms of not a lot.
Does he?
But he gives you something to think about because he's not been a disaster. I mean, I think it's you found your solid number two. But that's not the worst thing. He's been okay, but it's like
he's been as – I mean, just in terms of his performance, he's been as good or better than Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson. There's no question.
Yeah. I don't think the degree of difficulty with what they're having them do – merit
they also
some of these 14
some,
for 14
showed
starts.
Some faith in him. They let him throw only up a touchdown on third and long late in that game.
Heard the buzzer,
and
right?
People,
all right, we're
like,
out of here.
People were surprised. It was almost like the coaches were a little surprised because it got a little rainy during
game?
The game. I kept an eye on it. There was a rainstorm during the game, but you might have known a little earlier in the week that it was going to rain all over Jacksonville because the Houston Texans don't disrespect them as big-time underdogs. The Rainmaker. Briggs the rain. Briggs it.
How do we not have the graphic out, Ricky? Where's
the
Rainmaker?
We don't
need
that horrific graphic.
Did he tell you not to use it?
No,
there
I
it
didn't
is.
Say anything.
We're back here again.
Hey, Mark, you got to give it up. When the Rainmaker brings
I mean,
the
they
precipitation.
Won. He delivered, too. I mean,
he
if,
delivered.
You, if you want to. And by the way, I threw another one out during that show, and that was the Bills covering, which also came
we,
through.
So, I asked Ricky to check the file on that, and you weren't clear, really. You were a little bit like,
oh, give
said,
it to the Rainmaker.
You said Bills by 40. And you were like,
well, I said the Bills to cover. That's Bills cover.
Okay, yeah, we're just trying to parse the language of the Rainmaker, but that makes sense.
It's just Rainmaker lexicon.
They barely did. It came down to the last play. But that's 2-0.
That's a nice
another one got moved, but the Texans was the one I really felt in my
heart.
Everyone got all cute with like, oh, Urban Meyer's gone. That's worth points. Not so much when you're going against Davis Mills.
You actually said that about
Urban Meyer. Well, it was a fact. Like the spread moved.
Okay.
Do you know a part of this Pat McAfee empire that's been built has been built on the back of him getting very involved with the sports betting and his listeners cashing in on the McAfee predictions? We could get our listeners rich off the Rainmaker.
This is not what we want to be.
I thought we attempted
endorsing.
That last time.
Right. We are not.
Well, the Rainmaker hit an unfortunate drought, if you recall, and that's what led to the end of the Rainmaker. But if he's on a hot streak.
Ride that
if
hot
he's
streak.
On a heater.
Well, the key all these is there's no accountability. You only talk about it when you win.
Hey,
you win.
Pay for Christmas. Get behind the Rainmaker right now because he is on a heater.
Right. What happened last time was a couple families were put out on the street during Christmas because they did what you're asking.
Exactly.
And they
I don't
came
want
to
anyone.
Greg, and did Greg lift
anyone.
A finger to help anyone? No. It's
you
just like, you know, then it's,
no,
it's
I'm
you're
retiring
an adult,
on
you're making 2-0. Your own decision.
Although we got the Eagles.
No,
the Eagles
don't retire
coming
now.
Up. It's a worst case 2-1, but yeah. Got the Eagles coming up. But this was the one that was near and dear to my
heart. You're saying you're going to walk away from the Rainmaker?
Well, we'll see.
It's catching fire.
I don't think you can.
If any, you know, if I feel this was one of my favorite of the year, heavy underdogs to the worst offense. Mark said it, one of the worst offense he's seen in about 5 years. That's true. Getting rid of Urban.
I said since 1986.
Right. Getting rid of Urban Meyer doesn't solve that in one week.
That's how about all. An act of, like, altruism? Just you want to help our listeners pay for braces, college, prep school, Christmas.
Have you seen my locks record? I don't feel confident enough.
Yeah, but this is different. This is a special skill of yours. It's a special talent.
Well, what are some other things we could be paying for?
Leisure.
Leisure.
I mean, next level leisure.
Night at the pub.
Multiple nights at a pub while staying upstairs in a bed and breakfast.
Honeymoon vacation.
Maybe like a new outfit, because when you look good, you feel good.
Very
and when
good.
You feel good, you play good.
New
I mean,
outfits.
You could someone like, you know, the Gravedigger has extra expenses that are cropping up. You could pay for those types of extra expenses.
Well, we don't talk about that.
I said it in a roundabout way.
Yeah, but he had asked respectfully.
Erica has expenses that I don't even know how to drill down to, but I'm sure that you have a lot of lush hobbies.
What is that?
That cost money?
I don't know. He pivoted to you.
That was a weird
that was strange.
Little moment.
I'm just listing things that might cost money.
But congratulations, Rainmaker, because you're feeling it and you're lighting up the wallets and purses of all the blokes and lasses across the way. All right, Sunday Night Football.
Oh, Sunday night.
3rd and 10, 4 down territory, of course. Brady pressured. Escapes and throws with the run. He's intercepted. Gardner Johnson cuts underneath. They've turned Brady over twice. 8 interceptions in these regular season matchups the last 2 years with the Saints. And the New Orleans Saints are knocking on the door of a headline-grabbing win in Tampa against the Jets.
Mike Tirico, who, by the way, could not have set this conversation up any better. He just does that on the cuff, off the cuff. He just nailed it. And as his partner, Chris Collinsworth, soon followed up with, ha-ha, nobody likes sticking out their tongue more than C.J. Gardner-Johnson, which was kind of a weird take. Anyway, speaking of weird, Saints 9, Buccaneers 0. That was the final score of Sunday Night Football in Tampa. The Saints shut out a Bucs team that was besieged by injuries to Chris Godwin, to Mike Evans. Both exited the game with injuries, knee and hamstring, to Leonard Fournette, to a hamstring. And what was left was not nearly good enough. When Tom Brady is trying to target Tyler Johnson and Scotty Miller, it just wasn't playing, boys. And then you give it to Keyshawn Vaughn, who can't do anything, the former third-round pick. Add it all up, and it was one of the more frustrating nights of Tom Brady's career, at least in the regular season.
It was, and it was like a moment that I'm glad the Saints defense and the Saints team had, and maybe we'll continue to have over the next few weeks. We talked about the 49ers are like that team you want to see maybe in the six. How about the Saints as like the seven seed that really isn't going to make any noise, but it's fun. This is,
I get a Tulane guy, but
okay. Here's,
let's have 4 7 seeds and have them all play off. To find
okay,
out
we
who the
say
real
we want
seeders.
Diversity. This Saints defense, to see them have a night like this, and I get it. The injuries are what they were for the Bucs. They were 3-0 against the Bucs with Tom Brady before these injuries. Those injuries didn't start till midway through the third quarter. They had four. They had stopped them four times at that point, too. So, yeah, maybe they don't hold them to zero, but Cam Jordan's getting after it early. Marcus Davenport, that secondary's wild. This stat, to me, explains why the Saints, in some ways, are like the 2021 team more than any team. They are 4-0 right now against the teams, as of right now, that rank in the top four of current Super Bowl
odds. They're coming for the Vikings in this conversation.
Right.
So I like this.
Okay, the 4-0. Okay, they have played the teams that are the top four in current Super Bowl winning odds. They are 4-0 against those teams. They're 3-7 against everyone else.
There you go. There
well,
you go.
Well, I mean, you know, and it does matter that there's no Sean Payton. It says a lot about
does
to me.
Does it? I don't know. I feel like every time a head coach misses a game, his team wins.
I think they're like 7-0 in those situations. just that Sean Payton is a difference maker, but Dennis Allen did an incredible job this evening. I mean, Cam Jordan, stacked on the same side as Marcus Davenport, caused total chaos. And I thought that the defensive backfield was super sticky. I'm with Greg. I mean, yes, I know the injuries occurred. I don't think it mattered. I mean, they made up for a Saints offense that had 9 drives down the stretch that went for less than 20 yards, and most of those went for less than 5 yards. I mean, they were put back on the field over and over, and this is a situation where it's like, we wanted to know, do they have Tom Brady's number? Do they have this offense's number? Yes. Had the injuries not occurred, would this been maybe 10-9? Would they have lost? I don't know. I don't care.
We'll never know. They got the job done.
I'm just saying, I think it did matter.
I mean, big time. Because
it matters, but they were thumping them to start.
Of course it matters. But the Saints fans and the Saints don't want to hear about injuries mattering. Like, this team has been decimated by injuries throughout the course of the season. They had to keep playing, and even tonight they didn't have either of their top two Pro Bowl tackles. So I'm just saying, like,
tweet of the night was from Dat Boy Wolf. Here it is, his quote: I don't want to hear about Bucks injuries, but we out here throwing passes to Amazon delivery drivers.
Exactly.
So they have absolutely.
That was partly their own doing by drafting and developing
before the injuries.
Delivery drivers
for the Bucks: punt, 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 miss field goal, punt, punt. Then it started to happen. It's like it wasn't like there was any electricity early.
Okay, I hear that, and the Saints deserve all the credit for their defense and how it played, but once you lost your top two wide receivers and you're missing Antonio Brown, so now you're missing your top three wide receivers and you're missing Leonard Fournette, who has been sneaky, the most important part of that offense this year besides Tom Brady, and you take all those guys out of the mix, when it became time for Tom Brady to do magical Tom Brady stuff, it just felt completely impossible because he turned into Ryan Tannehill. And Brady, obviously a superior player to Tannehill, but once again, it shows you when you take a quarterback, no matter how good he is, and you take away all his weapons, an offense is going to suffer, especially against a good defense like New Orleans, who really got after him.
Right. They didn't. The Bucs' offensive line, which has been so good all year, Brady's barely been touched, did not win that battle. They came out wanting to throw. When everyone was healthy, they threw 11 straight times to start the game, and he was getting hit then. And he wasn't getting enough first downs then. He had that interception, you know, late, of course. He had the fumble when they were in position for a field goal. I mean, they could have scored points here. They missed the field goal. They had a two-minute drive at the end of the first half that also got stymied. They threw it to Rob Gronkowski. Brady did 11 times. And Gronk is having an amazing season, but he's nice as a compliment. He had two catches out of those 11 targets and at least three drops where he could have either come away with the ball or he wasn't paying attention on one that was in his breadbasket, would have put him on
that
first and goal in the two.
That was a huge miss.
Like they also did not come through in some key moments. And it's a massive win because I think the Saints now really have a real chance, a good chance, to go get that seven seed, which I didn't totally see coming into this game. And Tom Brady's MVP case, and more importantly, Tampa's chances to get the one seed, take a big hit. They're not done yet, but they take a big hit.
I mean, everyone's MVP, you know, campaign seems to take a big hit the minute we start to mention
Not Aaron Rodgers. He's played awesome for four straight
weeks. He's in the driver's seat now.
He's in the driver's seat.
No doubt about it.
Him and Taylor and Brady.
Remember after week one with Aaron Rodgers? Like, we were, you know, what's happened to this human being? He's not the same guy. I mean, I'm impressed with the Saints defense that has to mask over an offense that was also without both of its tackles, an offense that had 12 plays and 14 yards in the third quarter. I mean, that can break a defense when you have to keep going back out there over and over. They absolutely play with no fear against Brady. I mean, they're up in his face, and it's the one team. I think Dennis Allen has done a better job coaching against Tom Brady than any coordinator in the league in the last couple of years.
Oh, there's no doubt.
Dan not liking this.
No, though, I don't want to be the devil's advocate on this one, but somebody has to say it that Taysom Hill can't really play.
No, he can't.
So that's a problem. And as much as we want to see, some of us want to see the Saints in the playoffs. I have, from what I've seen personally in these, what is it, four starts now, is a guy who's exactly suited to where he was previously in his career as a gadget player. And when you put him out there as the quarterback, it's just not, it's not happening. The people around him and the offensive line matters, of course. But if you're asking him to win big games in December and January, I just don't see it.
That's true. I mean, they scored 9 points. Now they're going to play the Dolphins, Panthers, and Falcons. None of those are W's, you know, automatically. That Dolphins game's on Monday night. None of those are L's. That's just who this Saints team is. But I think with Hill, if they can, especially if they can get the offensive line healthy again, I think he makes sense just for the style of play that they have. And no quarterback would be succeeding. They clearly just went into this season with a huge mistake without getting enough pass catchers. I mean, they just don't have guys who can make a play. Nick Vannett, make a play. Troutman, make a play. I thought Hill in the first half of this game threw the ball pretty well, you know?
Like, get in sync with Alvin Kamara. That would help.
Michael Thomas situation played out. That was a huge setback for this season as well.
They needed another guy, too.
I agree with you on that. Mark, final word to you on this Sunday night masterpiece.
What would you like me to say?
I don't know.
I've got a final.
Greg has one. Greg always has one in the chamber. But I was wondering, maybe Mark has one in the chamber.
I absolutely come away from this game thinking
certain
that
about
the Saints. Well, I know Sean Payton wasn't there, but he was my coach of the year guy for so long. And I just think that they're one of the best run teams out there. And to do this four times to Tom Brady in a couple of seasons is pretty impressive.
I agree.
Stephen has a little something special sauce you can't measure when you watch just the energy. But that's not my last one. My last final thought.
Greg has two final thoughts.
My last
and then he's going to have a third and a fourth.
The Best Actor Award for the 2021 season goes to Bruce Arians over the last 3 weeks when he kept answering questions about Antonio Brown and said, well, we're not sure yet. We haven't made that call. Yeah, you made that call well before you saw your receivers go down tonight. There was confirmed now that he will be coming back on the team, Antonio Brown, but there was no situation where they were ever getting rid of this guy, and tonight was a reminder.
Well, especially now.
And also, he's acting because also it's not his decision, it's Tommy's decision. Tommy boy.
Right. Tom and he have a bunk bed in Tom's bedroom where Tom Brady sleeps on the top bunk and Antonio
Brown
sleeps on the bottom bunk.
It's the size of the bunk beds that my sons Jack and Harry share.
Sure. It's the only bunk bed size they sell.
Their legs hang over the end and they just talk each other to sleep and tell stories and giggle. And then eventually, guys, that's enough. We don't want you cranky in the morning. Come on now.
Who's saying that?
Mom and dad.
Okay, I'm struggling to figure out who the mom and dad is in Tom Brady's house, but fair enough.
Think about it.
I'm going to.
Okay, that gives you something to think about. All right, we're done.
When final thoughts go wrong.
Get me out of here.
That is the week. Well, it's not even full, obviously. We got four more games. This is a different week. Obviously, it's Christmas week, and that's fun, and we love that. But it's also football week in a big spot. So we had one game Saturday. We had one game Thursday. We had one game Saturday. We had 10 games Sunday. We'll have two games Monday, and we'll have two games on Tuesday. Is that all right?
Yeah, and then another game on Thursday.
Another game on Thursday.
And two games on Saturday, which is Christmas.
Two games on Saturday.
10 nights of primetime NFL football.
It's like if you wanted to know what it would be like if football, as your favorite sport, which fits so well that when your work week was done, there was a game on your weekend. Now you know what it's like if it were baseball and it were every night of the week.
This reminds me of Peter Schrager was texting us this weekend and mentioned that his son, his young son, I think he's 5 years old, watches every around the NFL broadcast in the morning, which is pretty amazing.
What pop.
And he said that he has takes from watching our show. And one of them is that Mark hates the schedule.
Well, the nature of the 17-game schedule, and Peter Schrager mentioned that his wife agreed. So I've got two-thirds of the family. Peter respects Greg the most. We know that.
He's on record
clear.
There.
I mean, that was years ago.
He perhaps did not respect my take, but his wife and child do.
All right. Good stuff.
Perhaps he does respect it. I don't know. Why am I still talking? End the show.
Anyway, we'll have a Tuesday night show, recapping the four games left to go. And then a Thursday preview.
A little different schedule, yeah.
And then a Friday, Saturday TV show. It's all there. Until then, heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.